paramedic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Fourth hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5. The game on this Monday. We say hello to Caleb Joseph. We always enjoy our conversations with him. Caleb, how you doing?
Doing great. Just still waiting. Still waiting like everybody else.
Do you feel good about this wait, or are you starting to get nervous about this season?
No, I really do. I feel good about it. We had a conference call with our representative that meets with the players' union, and we really think we're going to end up playing. It may not be July 1st, 2nd, 3rd. We really feel like we're going to get some games in, trying to get it going as fast as we can, trying to start it up. We're all anxious to play and anxious to get out there and bring some hope back to just the sport of baseball, really, and everybody else, and gives people something to watch at night.
No doubt about it. Do you think it's realistic to really try to get in 114 games in this regular season?
If they take it to October 31st, I do, with the expanded potential 30, 31 player roster size. I really think that you can play a couple doubleheaders. And look, I mean, the players want to do it. So everybody that I've talked to, we're all in agreement that we want to play as many as we can. The extra players are going to help with the extra games in terms of pitching. The first thing I think about is just pitchers. I mean, I think hitters can get ready in 2 weeks. You have to assume these pitchers have been doing a lot, but, you know, you can't. Everybody's different, right? So you're going to need the first game of the season, if it is July 3rd or 4th, you may have a pitcher only go 4 or 5 innings, max, maybe. So you're going to need coverage, and then you're going to need that the next day. These extra players, I think, are going to help cover some of those early issues, and then hopefully you get rolling where the pitchers are on more of a normal schedule, maybe 4 or 5 weeks into it, and then it really starts to be a benefit to have those extra players.
You've been at this for a long time, and so you've played a variety of schedules coming up through the ranks and then in the bigs, and so you've seen it from 162 and on down, even going back to college. So what do you think is the right amount? Are you okay? Do you think there's going to be a rethink on how long the season needs to be, or do you think 162 is the right number, or do you think when we see this play out, maybe it'll change the mindset a little?
Right. It's always been kind of a topic up for debate. It's a great question. I mean, it's always been 162 since I think I've been alive. And I do think that it could be shortened up a little bit and you'd still get the same results in terms of the best teams usually coming out on top. I mean, think about how September used to work. I know this is probably the first year that they weren't going to have the quote expanded roster where you have 40 guys, but I mean, September was pretty much a free for all. I mean, you'd have 35 guys playing on each team in one single game. And so if you take those 30 games out, that's 132 games. I really think that you want to play as many as you can because it gives people's stuff to do constantly every single night, but in the same sentence, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder, I think. So if you do take an extra 4 or 5 days a month, maybe, you may get a couple more people to come out to the games. And honestly, I mean, it is every single day. And
yeah,
you are there every day.
Yeah.
And as a player, you know, a lot of people go to the games. They don't necessarily think about, I guess, the player that literally plays 28 out of 30 days that month, you know. So we like to have lives too, you know, even though that's our job. But I think players would probably get on board for about 140, 142. But then again, there's consequences to that.
Or you could expand the playoffs to help you know, with that a little bit and expand it that way and try to make it up on the other end, because we live in now a mindset with professional athletes where, you know, we've got a phrase called, you know, load management, and their players are always talking about, you know, taking nights off or, you know, trying to brace for the bigger picture of playoffs. And, you know, I mean, there is no bigger grind than a baseball travel. I mean, not only are you playing the most amount of games and it's not even close, the travel of a season to cut down on games and travel, I would have to believe you guys, it would feel different to your body, would it not, and your mind?
It would. Take a West Coast trip, for example, when you are playing on a team in the East Coast. When I was with Baltimore for a number of years, we'd make those West Coast trips. We'd be out there for 10 days. The good thing is we'd have an entire full travel day to get there. And after that last game, we have an entire full travel day to come home. So your body adjusts a lot better when you have a full 24 hours. Most of the time, especially on weekdays, we'll play 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock games and be in Baltimore, play a 7 o'clock game, get on the airplane at 10, 11, 12, fly to Texas, play that night in Texas. And those turnarounds and those late nights and all those things, if you, like you were talking about, if you, especially with the travel, if you were able to break those up and have a whole day off on a travel day right when you're about to start the next road trip or coming back from a road trip, those type of things, it really would help. And you'd probably see guys able to recover faster and able to produce at even higher clip, even though they're at the top of the world in terms of production. But it's amazing how everybody comes back after a day off. They all come back with this little spike of energy, and they're excited to see everybody else, because you can imagine being in the same clubhouse and locker room with the same 30, 35 guys for 162 days out of 182 days.
Talking to Caleb Joseph and talking about the potential of baseball getting back up and running here very, very soon. And Caleb, I know there's been a lot of rhetoric out there shared and concern about the two sides coming together, but you seem to be showing a lot of optimism today. Just with the players' proposal that's been reported, there was a lot of talk about some doubleheaders. And I think the first time we had you on, we were thinking about, you know, a seven-inning doubleheader like they do in the minor league some. Is that in your mind how you would get more games in, maybe some seven-inning doubleheaders?
I think that's on the table right now. Again, over the last 4, 5, 6 weeks, you know, as you can imagine, we're throwing everything around, and it's like this huge vacuum, and everything will kind of circle back to one issue and then get off track on this issue and then come back around. And so the last I heard, they were thinking about seven-inning doubleheaders, and that is actually pretty fun because it's only two-inning difference. And people say, well, it's just two innings. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. But, I mean, it is unbelievable how different the game is in a seven-inning game. It is unreal, and it's sort of like a chess game going, you know, moving into a checkers game. You know, it's like it moves so much quicker, and I thought they were kind of fun, you know, playing in the minor leagues, and so I'd be up for that. And it kind of forces you to really make moves quicker, and it doesn't seem like it's only six more outs on each side of the baseball for the team, but it's unbelievable how much that strategy has changed. I would be all for it, Willie.
This may be sensitive for you to discuss because I don't want to put you in a bad position, but I know the money issue is a sensitive one and a tricky one going forward. How many fans are going to come in? How much revenue is going to be generated? But in a general sense, do you feel like you're making some headway on that, trying to close that gap?
Yeah, I do. I think the proposal was that MLB sent over. I think it kind of took some people aback. We really felt like that what we agreed to in March was done, and that part of the negotiation was finished, and we're still sticking to that. And, you know, I can't help it, but there's a lot of people out there that, oh, it's millionaires arguing with billionaires, this and that and whatever. And I would just remind people that the earning span of a Major League Baseball player is super small. So take me, for example. I'm 34 years old. I've been able to play 5 or 6 years in the big leagues, but I'm at the end of this thing, and I'm at the end of the rope. And so, you know, I once it's done, the baseball's over. I'm have to find something else to do. So a lot of people, they talk about, well, just play for nothing now, and then next year you'll do this and do that. Well, I mean, there may not be a next year for me, you know. So, and it's all these type of things that we're having to take into consideration. And we just really felt like that part of the negotiation was agreed upon weeks and weeks ago, so that we didn't have to be in this spot. But we do feel like there's going to be a baseball season. I couldn't say that 2 weeks ago, and the reports coming out may try to seem differently, but I really feel like here in the next week to 10 days, you're going to see a lot of people in their cars headed down to Florida or Arizona or wherever the final arrangements are, and baseball will be starting back up.
Another thing that I think a lot of fans fail to realize sometimes when they see the salaries that major league players make is not only the limited window that you earn that, but also what you have to do to get to that. And you certainly spent plenty of time in the minor leagues, Caleb, getting up to that ability to make a great living that you can as a Major League Baseball player. And I want to pick your brain about the proposed and what appears to be on the horizon for the whole minor league system. It does look like they're going to revamp that in the minors as we know it. I got a chance to play, you know, a couple of summers in the New York Penn League and the Pioneer League. I have great stories to tell for a lifetime. Mm-hmm. From that, but it sounds to me like they're going to change that model some. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's disheartening, really. I mean, I think the last player maybe to not literally play a game in the minor leagues was Mike Leake, and then going back to even Robin Ventura. So you look at guys like Mike Trout played in the minor leagues. Everybody that is in the big leagues played in the minor leagues. Like, you have to play. And of course, yes, well, not all of them are going, but these steps are vital. And imagine going from middle school straight to your junior year in high school, or even your freshman year in high school, jumping all the way to your sophomore year in college. Like, this is the type of drastic change that each level is. And it doesn't seem like much, but it really, every level really does have a new advancement and a new way of separating the other players. And every level, you get better and better and better. And those steps are vital and necessary for baseball players. You just don't shoot up like the NFL guys, go straight from playing in their bowl games to the NFL, it seems like. I mean, it's just such a process. And I'm extremely disheartened to see that they're potentially cutting down a lot of these teams that are vital and necessary. And quite honestly, Willie, I mean, a lot of these teams, that this is a huge event for these cities, these kind of not obscure cities, but kind of smaller cities like in Aberdeen, Maryland, just kind of tucked sure. away. They've got their own little ball field. All these places that, like you said, I've got tons of stories from. I probably got more stories from the minor leagues than I have in the major leagues. And the interaction you have with these people, and these people live, eat, breathe, sleep it, and the prospect of these cities losing teams is incredibly disheartening. And if anybody ever asks me to join some sort of organization, so I'm going to fight like all get out just to keep these, because I know how important it is to the people that live in those cities, you know, and that's a huge revenue for them in terms of enjoyment, fun, escape. And we don't want that to happen. Plus, it helps the players out. I'm totally against it, Willie.
And a point that was made, I think it was the Royals, and I think it was Dayton Moore that put this out there, just trying to stand behind the minor leaguers. He made a great point about the investment that you make in the minors, not only to develop major leaguers, but you got baseball fans and ambassadors for life. You know, the ex-minor leaguers go on to be coaches, you know, whether it's a little league team or a high school team, and they love the game, and they pass along that love everywhere else. So I just think every place that you don't have that team anymore, that exacts a big price. I know you might save a little money on the front end, but what are you going to lose on the back end with that?
Right. Just throwing money at a community and trying to start up an organization won't really fix any sort of issue. Look, Willie, I mean, My grandfather had season tickets to the Nashville Sounds when I was growing up. I was small. I enjoyed going there. I wanted to go there, and that's where my love of baseball really clicked, in my opinion. I ended up working for the Sounds when I was in high school. I was a little clubhouse kid, and it was this type of opportunity that I had. And, I mean, I've played in the minor leagues. There are kids that are working for these minor league teams that aspire to be baseball players or just anything involved with the game, whether, like you said, it goes on to be a high school coach or open their own private facilities. I know tons of people that didn't make it into professional baseball or whatever, but the love of the game because of those minor league cities that they grew up watching and going to, they form relationships, and before you know it, one, two, three guys that are huge baseball fans, they go in on a facility, and that feeds, it's like it's just like milk. It feeds the growth of the sport to all the younger generations. And I'm telling you, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of thousands of thousands of kids that went to minor league games that their love of the game was watching those guys in the stands because it was incredibly affordable in the place they lived, and they loved it. And they're fans from now on. And we need to keep the fans. You know what I mean? It's those type of people that go and take a road trip to a major league city. You know, it's that's what we did. We didn't have a major league city, so we went to Atlanta. We went to St. Louis because we loved going to these minor league games. The love grew. We wanted to go to the big thing, and we took trips and did it.
We're talking to Caleb Joseph, Toronto Blue Jays catcher, about all things going on in baseball right now. So, you know, we've talked a lot about a lot of different aspects of trying to get an agreement in place to get you guys back on the field. Do you feel like, though, that everybody from the health and safety standpoint, that both the players and owners, everybody appears to be on the same page with that?
Yeah, there's one thing that there, in my opinion, there's complete solidarity in, and that is the steps and requirements that are going to be necessary to continue playing, where we respect not only everybody's needs, wants, desires, feelings, fans' needs, fans' desires, in terms of, you know, we don't want to leave and create this bubble that we get to do whatever we want while everybody else. Does that make sense? I'm trying to have a,
sure.
I'm having a hard time like explain what I'm thinking, but there's going to be a lot, and that's why it may take another week to 10 days, because we want to make sure we get it right in terms of the safety and protocols, because there are people with high risk. I have two teammates that have little girls that are under 5 years old that have respiratory issues, and you're balancing, okay, what does work and real life look like, and where do those meet, and where does the risk-reward level out? And so we've got to be kind of understanding and considerate of all these types of situations. And so I firmly believe that there is 100% solidarity on figuring those issues out and how best we can navigate that. Because at the end of the day, everybody wants to play baseball. We want to be a success, not, well, we wanted to rush this process, so we went so fast that we missed this and missed that and missed this, and now we're having to cancel season because we've got this and this and that going. So I really think they're spending a lot of time on that, and it's worth a lot of time.
Do you guys, and that kind of leads me into my next question, have you all paid attention to what other leagues are doing? I mean, is that something that you have to worry about in your own backyard and what you guys are looking for as players? But is there a sense of, all right, the NHL has their plan and the NBA seems to be having one? Is that something that you're paying attention to, or you just try to focus on what's going on in your sport?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think we're seeing these other things and the wheels of the other sports starting to churn, and it gives us more hope that it can happen, that, okay, if some of these other folks are able to figure it out, then America's pastime should be able to figure it out. I mean, and I think the main thing that I'm paying attention to is what's going on over in Asia from a baseball standpoint. You've got Japan and Korea that are ramping it up. So we want to be playing, you know what I mean? So this is America's pastime. There's so many people that I've talked to over the last 6 to 8 weeks that are not diehard baseball fans, just kind of casual here and there, flip it on, oh, there's a game, I'll just watch it for a couple minutes, that have told me I am so ready to watch baseball game, and I don't think I've ever really realized how much I liked baseball until this happened. So we are so anxious and ready to get out on the field, start playing, give people something to do, give people something to cheer about, give people something else to talk about on Twitter than what all is going on right now. Let people start arguing about who's got the best pitcher and who's got the best batter. Like, let's give them something to talk about. But we're ready to go, and so we really think something's going to happen pretty soon.
You brought up earlier of the time that a pitcher needs to get ready and hitters. You obviously are a hitter, but you're also a catcher. How difficult is it for you to – you started going through the process, you're getting to know your pitchers, you're getting to know their tendencies, but now you kind of have to redo that, pick that up again. So what is the process for you as a catcher of trying to learn – the guy's throwing you the ball?
Yeah. To be honest with you, that job really never changes because you're dealing with humans. So even at game 45 of the season, you're still learning new things about pitchers and how they would like to do this and do that. And it just takes a lot of trial and error and hit and miss stuff. But you're right. It was frustrating, especially going to a new team, feeling like, okay, I'm finally getting a grasp on this player, that player, what he likes to do, what he doesn't like to do, and then pump the brakes, stop, see you later. And there's been this sort of odd absence. The only experience I have that I could slightly pull from is All-Star break. So when you go home, I know it's only like 4 or 5 days, but it does feel like a month when you've been with somebody every single day, and then you do go back. It takes a few days, but then you get going and you start rolling. And, guys, we've been doing this for years and years and years, and it's just part of our DNA and part of our blood. So you just find ways to have conversations. And I feel like we're going to have a lot of time to sit back and talk and make sure that we're all on the same page. But reality is we're probably going to have a shortened spring training, and we're going to start hitting games. And everybody's in this situation. That's a good thing. It's not just the Toronto Blue Jays. Every single team's in this exact same situation. So the first month of the season, it may be a little crazy. And it's going to be crazy for a lot of teams. So it's going to be about who can figure it out the fastest and who can make the quickest adjustments and who can do those things and be successful.
As we wrap this up with this extra time, have you been working on the air drums?
I've been enjoying my little electric set, to be honest with you, Darren. I mean,
Really?
I've got it up in the house, and I mean, I don't ever get to play them during the season, so I've been escaping up there with the headphones and just beating on those things and enjoying it. But I've been staying busy out in the yard. I'll tell you what, I got a honey-do list that just keeps growing. You know, I mean, I pull all the weeds and trim the flowers, and then something else picks up. So I've been staying busy, but it's been good. It's been good being home. I didn't realize I had bushes that actually make color until this year because I'm never around them
right.
In the summertime. So I'm sitting here going, goodness, I have rose bushes that actually look pretty good. You know, when I usually have them, they're brown.
Yeah, you never see them bloom.
That's right.
Was the Blue Jay spring training, was that the biggest audience you've ever had for a little air drum session?
Oh, yeah. I mean, trying to rally a country, you know
that was
I mean?
Sold it out. Was, that was sold out of event. That
was
really good.
Yeah. I mean, I was nervous. I was sweating. I was nervous, but I think it went okay. We'll have to pull a little air drum, like, 2.0. I think the last time I was on with you guys, I told you I was going to do it, and I've muffed it. So maybe I'll have to shoot one tonight or something.
I like it. We'll be watching if you do. Thanks for the visit. As always, you and the family continue to be safe, and hopefully we'll be talking about your sport real soon.
Let's do it. Thanks, guys.
All right, that is Caleb Joseph, Nashvillian. We always enjoy our conversations with the Toronto Blue Jays. He is their Toronto Blue Jays catcher, and if you haven't seen the video of him in spring training back in February with his entire team watching and him
feels like forever ago
paying homage, I know it does, to Neil Peart and Rush, go check it out. It's fantastic. It is really good. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. This would make our last guest smile, Caleb Joseph, because he could do a mean air drums to Rush.
For Neil Peart.
Do what?
I said Neil Peart, man.
Neil Peart was awesome, man. That was probably the best three-man band show I'd ever seen live.
Pretty cool. Yeah, I never got to see them. I hate that. I regret that.
ZZ Top's a three-man band too, right?
Well,
trying to think of the
three-man.
They're
kind of two-man. I mean, they have, I guess, a backing band, but it's really just the two of them.
I was trying to think of the smaller groups that pretty impressive stuff. We do appreciate Caleb Joseph for joining us. One thing that we did pass along earlier in the show, the unfortunate passing of former Auburn head football coach and Hall of Famer Pat Dye at 80 years of age. He did test positive for coronavirus. He was also dealing with some kidney issues, and he passed away today at age 80. And one of the things that we brought up, you know, he went out, he recruited Bo Jackson. He went out and recruited Tracy Rocker, who won an Outland Trophy. And one of the things that also we've got to mention that was on his watch, that he was a big part of, he was a big part of getting the Iron Bowl moved. You know, they used to play it in Birmingham, and getting it moved to the home sites and getting it to Jordan-Hare Stadium. And that, you know, some will say it changed the Alabama-Auburn rivalry forever. And so Pat Dye was in the middle of all that. And I think he won, what, 4 SEC championships? So wanted to pass that along, too, because that was a big part of his resume at his time at Auburn.
Boy, I think of some great Iron Bowls between Pat Dye and Bear Bryant. You know, those are, you know, back during that time, we remember we had a really fun segment of the show. Was that last week, maybe the week before, about what younger people may not really be able to fathom, that the world was like, the world was a certain way back in the day. Before they really allowed a lot of college football to be televised, you really only got a pretty small window into college football. You got some great games, but when you got down to it, you probably only saw 15 or 20 teams play, maybe, right? Is that fair to say? In a season, if you only watched the regional college football games in your area,
yep,
a lot of Keith Jackson. But the Iron Bowl was one you saw every year, right? Keith Jackson and Frank Broyles doing those games. Just tremendous atmospheres at those games. It was awesome.
No doubt about it. So we wanted to pass that along. What, speaking of college football, where do we think that we? I think it feels like there's going to be fans in the stands, right? I mean, I asked this to Vince Ferrara, and he feels the same way. Doesn't know the percentage, but he feels like there's going to be fans at Neyland Stadium. Obviously, it holds a lot. I don't know is it 25%? Is it 30%? I don't know what that number is. We were talking about youth baseball tournaments that happened over the weekend in Lawrenceburg and in Deckard here in our state, and, you know, them kind of asking spectators to make sure that they socially distance. They're not having your typical bleachers. They don't want you sitting in the bleachers. The same will hold true for college football games. I don't know what the right number is, but it does seem and feel like it's going in the direction of they're going to have fans in the stands. And I would assume probably the same on the NFL side of things, right? And it feels that way too.
Step by step. I just keep thinking, and let's go step by step. You don't have to decide today, but I think there is some optimism right now as things are opening up. That okay, we as long and there are extremes, right? There's people going a little too far too quick for a lot of people's liking, and we don't know the results of all this. I mean, all the stuff that we saw over the weekend, we don't know. Like, let's hope there's no outbreaks because of that, because all the people that were gathered together. Which is still what the health experts are saying, that's the no-no. That should be the last thing we do, right, as we go step by step.
Oh, you mean like downtown?
Downtown all over the country, right? That, you know, there were 30 or 35 cities that had issues like that where I saw a lot of people wearing masks, for sure, but they're shoulder to shoulder in a lot of cases. So
thousands of people.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so we're just in phase two?
So that those
Nashville
are the kind of
thousands of people gathering. Okay,
those are the kind of things that could set you back, right? And that can affect how many fans we might be able to have in the stands for games like that. You know, so that's that's worst case. But at the same time, you want to stay positive. You want to stay optimistic that, you know, we'll make strides and we'll keep getting better at how to live with it.
So to answer your original question, Darren, yes, I do think there will be some fans in the stands. I don't know the number. I won't even try to predict it because I think it'll change a ton of times before we actually get there. But here's a question that I have about this, because I thought about this over the weekend, especially when Texas made their announcement of 25%. What's something that that the SEC put in place last year that schools could elect to do or not to do?
Alcohol.
So do we think that, and this can apply to the NFL too, that maybe they don't serve alcohol at games? Now, could you get tanked before a game? Sure. But the reason I bring that up is because if you've had a few, you may not have social distancing top of mind. So I wonder if that's something that comes up of, we're going to let some fans in, we're not going to serve alcohol, and see if that makes any difference at all. And I don't know if it will, but it's just a thought that has come to my mind.
Well, it's pretty easy to socially distance yourself at Neyland Stadium if there's only 25 or 30,000 people in there, right? I mean, that's a vast stadium. I mean, it would be – you would have to want to violate social distancing in a scenario or setup like that. I mean, it's not like you're just leaving the one seat open next to you to either side. I mean, you're talking about you shouldn't have anyone anywhere near you. It's just like everything else, Chase. I don't know how you're going to – you can put all the stuff in writing and put all the rules out there and regulations you'd like to see people do, or even suggestions. But in the end, kind of like what we talked about today and on Friday with these tournaments, you know, who's really going to – I mean, how are you going to really police that? What are you going to do? You have Philip Fulmer and some people just walking around the concourses making sure people aren't getting too loose and, you know, hanging out and secretly meeting outside the bathrooms. I don't – you know, I mean, what are you going to do? It's like –
it'd be kind of awesome if he was doing that. Wait, is that Coach Fulmer?
Here comes Phil. Here comes Phil. Move. Scatter.
He's got a whistle.
He's coming.
He's coming. He's coming. Here he comes. Here comes Fulmer.
Shh, shh, shh.
Yeah. Be quiet. Step in the bathroom. So what are you going to do? I mean, I had this conversation with the person that I was talking with. You know, that's great that you have these rules. That's great that you – it seems like everybody's trying to do the right thing. Was it perfect? No, it's never going to be perfect. You know, sign a virtual waiver, all that stuff. But in the end, really, when you sign up for that tournament, if you sign up to buy a ticket, if you go to the game, you're just assuming risk. I mean, there is no perfect scenario. You are just going to assume risk. If you aren't comfortable in any of these settings that we're laying out there, you're just not going to go. If you're not comfortable, no matter what the rules are of going to a college football game, you're just going to stay home. If you're not comfortable going to a youth baseball tournament, no matter what the rules are, you're just not going to go. So some of it is, look, if you make the decision to go, you are basically assuming risk and hoping for the best and hoping that everybody does their part, and hopefully the rules are, for the most part, you know, abided by. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to be perfect. It's not. It's not going to be perfect in any setting because it's impossible to police it. It's impossible. So you're just going to have to, you know, hope for the best. I mean, it's just like anything else that we do, just like we've talked about on the show. When you go do anything right now, and oh, by the way, if you haven't been out, people are out and about. This just in. You are assuming risk, even if you're trying to do the right thing. You hope that everybody else is. I mean, I will say this. Willie, you did bring it up. Well, there were thousands gathered around the country in different markets, and even here, you've seen the pictures or the video. It did seem like, you know, there was a lot. Not all. Obviously, it, once again, wasn't perfect, but I did see more masks than I thought I would see, quite honestly.
Yeah, a lot of them.
I go out and about around, you know, in my life, I feel like that I brought it up Friday. That was my, you just made the list. I felt like there's just too many people right now that it's like, okay, well, everything's open back up. So, you know, everything's in the clear. We're done. We're done here. Nothing to see here anymore. And it's like, whoa, no, that's not the case. Like we need to continue to do the right things. I'm glad things are opening back up, but we have to understand that this is not over. It's not close to being over. And let's be aware and let's do the right thing. Let's continue to act like we were doing 2 months ago. You didn't leave the house then without a mask, so why would you do it now? Nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. We've got more testing. That's good. But the virus isn't gone. So, you know, let's be aware of that. And so it's no different than what we're talking about. I just think, Chase, you ask a good question, but, I mean, in the end, like, what are they really going to do if some, you know, people meet up in Section 112? You know what I mean?
Yeah. But, I mean, you have to have some sort of CYA, and that's part of it. And
well, they will. I mean, everybody will. They'll have stuff in writing, and they'll do things for CYA. But in the end, if you go, you are assuming risk, and you are hoping that everybody does their part. But also knowing probably not everybody will.
Yeah, and then we might be back in the mess that we were in a couple months ago, and you won't get to go at all, and you won't get to watch on TV because they'll have to bag it. I mean, that's kind of how I look at it. Like, either do your part or don't, but understand there are consequences if you don't, or it could be. Yep. So that's just kind of how I look at it, and I think a lot of people look at it that way.
We will come back and wrap up Monday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Don't forget, you can stream us from anywhere. I know a lot of you are doing that. You can also download by downloading the Nashville app, the Game Nashville app, which is easy and free to do. You can enable Alexa Skill or Google Home, ask it to play 102.5 The Game, or you can live stream from the website, which is thegamenashville.com, gamenashville.com. I think on the way out on this Monday, we've tried to do the right balance of talking about what's important and what is out there front and center, and also try to do a balance of talking sports today. And so we started off this way, so we might as well end it this way, and I'll just kind of see if you guys have any final thoughts, and we'll just go from there. Anybody have any final words?
Nothing new for me. I just, you know, I started off the show, I got a little cracked up, a little emotional, because it was hard. I think we've accomplished what we wanted to try to be on our game and how we expressed our thoughts and emotions here. I again, commend everybody that is a part of the show, but I don't know if I can express, you know, truly, you know, all the thoughts and emotions that I've been thinking about. But it starts with, how can we all be better, right? Where do we go? Look at ourselves in the mirror. Look at it from a different perspective. Put yourself in somebody else's shoes as best you can. Listen to people who have a different background than your own. And I think that will put us on the right path. And I commend all the organizations, leagues, universities, athletes, individuals that have expressed their desire to try to make it better. You know, that's a good start. And so hopefully we can just take it step by step and see if we can get something meaningful out of this, as terrible as it was.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you know, just echo what I brought up earlier of, you know, I'm one of those people that I try and find the good in everybody, and I try to spread that and to spread love and to preach love. And I know that it's not always that simple, and that sometimes there are bad people in this world. And that's always been hard for me to accept. But I think that with our city, you know, we do a lot of great things in this town, and Nashville always picks each other up when there's something wrong or something bad that has happened, whether it's this pandemic or the tornadoes before. And even the events of Saturday, I mean, there are going to be there's going to be a rally of people that help pick us up. But that violence and everything that transpired Saturday night is not the way to fix this. It's not the way to find peace. And I think a lot of people know that, but that's my message, that we just, there's a better way, and we have to talk and have that dialogue. And then, you know, I think we can find some sort of solution. But, you know, I love everybody and pray for everybody, and just want some peace in this world. That's all I'm looking for.
Yeah, I'm going to cast it in the light of Saturday night under that umbrella, because it really wasn't about what took place before that. I felt like when the sun went down is when chaos ensued, and the things that really depressed me over the weekend, disgust me, depressed me, had me down. It was hard to be motivated yesterday to do anything. It was really difficult to sit and watch Saturday night. But, as a city, we're better than that. And I preface it by saying we're better than Saturday night. No
Very
issues
true.
With anything before Saturday night, before the really evening. Agree. But Saturday night, we're better than that. Like, I hope I never see those images again. Not this city, not this market. We're above that. Let's stay on point. Let's do no more bringing innocent people or businesses into it. They have nothing to do with this. They just happen to be in the wrong location, and that's not their fault, okay? Let's not do that anymore. That's where you lose the message, in my opinion, when you bring in innocent people, and I don't think there's any need for that, and I hope we don't do that again. What happened Saturday night doesn't happen again in our city. Because of that, along those lines, I've admitted that yesterday was just not a good day for me, trying to really reflect and figure out what the heck just happened. And with that being said, you know, normally I would have watched, I guess, part two of Lance Armstrong?
Yep.
Sunday night? I didn't watch. And quite honestly, I didn't care. So I don't know if you guys did it or not, but I didn't watch it. I know we would have touched on it at some point today, but I didn't watch because I just really wasn't in the mood to watch. I didn't care to watch. So did anybody else take it in?
I did.
I did watch it. It was more, I think I had loaded up on all the coverage on Saturday deep into the night, and so I kind of used it to as a diversion, you know. And then, of course, as soon as I stopped watching, I flipped back over to some news channels because I wanted to see what was going on, you know, if anything else had happened. So I yo-yoed back and forth. And so I did watch Lance Armstrong. It's very, very compelling. I had seen I'd seen two other documentaries on the whole Lance Armstrong thing recently. This was very well done. It took all three have a little bit of a different angle, which shows you how complex Lance Armstrong is, but plenty of the same themes come up through. And let's just say, I don't know if Lance Armstrong is going to come out of this looking any better than he was before, if that was his goal. I think he wants to be understood and maybe get through. I think the one compelling thing I think that was asked, and you'll see this, Darren, was the host of the documentary, the interviewer, says, "Do you want to be relevant again?" And he says, "I am relevant." And in his own mind, I think it can mean a lot of different things, but it's a really good essay question, right? Because you can take that question a lot of, what does relevant mean?
Sure.
You know, it's certainly never going to be the same for him.
Yeah.
But I think his goal might be to be different, it being a different place than he is right now. There's one fundraiser he goes to, you know, because he's not being asked to go to the ESPYs these days, right? He's not going to the top level things to ask to be a speaker like he once was. He went to what was it called? Babes for Boobs or something? It was a breast cancer fundraiser, and it was not your A-level celebrities that were there. It was kind of like, this is what the message was, that this is where what his life is now, right, in the public eye. So it's very, very compelling.
Hmm. Well, I'll watch it this week at some point, but I just wasn't in the mood. I know quickly on the way out, was there some news on the NASCAR front?
Yeah, Adam Stern of Sports Business Journal put this out there a little bit ago. NASCAR is evaluating allowing fans back at its races as soon as later this month, and earlier it was looking like it would be after July 4th, possibly at Homestead, Miami, and or Talladega, per sources. This would be reduced capacity only in places where local rules now allow it, and the decision is still being studied / not yet final.
Very, very interesting. All right, that'll do it for our show today. Everybody have a great rest of your day. Enjoy the weather. It's beautiful outside, and we'll be back at it tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.